President, sir, thank you for your patience. We are in your ignorance. You may comment as soon as you are ready. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, colleagues. My name is John Mokoena. I represent a community called Bahlakwane Bamanzimnyama. Bahlakwane Bamanzimnyama is a clan that lost its land and livestock in the Malahleni area in the Mpumalanga province. This happened through systematic reduction of our grandfather's land until the clan was pushed out of the land completely. We also participated in the reopening of the land claims process to Parliament, and we have formally lost and accepted that land claim. So, Chairperson, we have a direct interest on this matter. We also want to state that we have strong confidence in the parliamentary processes because of this reopening of land claim processes. We would like to thank Parliament and the relevant portfolio committees for allowing us to be part of its decision-making processes. And we would also like to thank this portfolio committee specifically for the exposure that we are getting, the legal expertise that we are getting as a source. We are quite a destitute community. We cannot afford legal advice, but as we were following the proceedings throughout the passing weeks, we really got a lot of information through the process. Honorable Chairperson, our position as Bahlakwane is and has always been that the budget for restitution of land rights and appropriation of property is not enough. It will never be enough. The loss of land and property by the dispossessed communities took place over 3 centuries, and the extent of the loss was massive, and no budget would ever stop the loss. The expropriation bill seeks to address this loss at the most possible and cost-effective way. So we therefore support the use of expropriation as a legal method to assist the land reform process. Chairperson, our request is that this bill, given our history of dispossession in this country, be given very extensive powers to expropriate land and property from private landowners at public interest. According to us, public interest is the land reform process that is run parallel. Our proposal is that when expropriation takes place, compensation be categorized as follows, depending on the nature of dispossession. Expropriation and a fair market value be paid. Expropriation and a nominal value be paid, and expropriation without compensation. Expropriation where fair market value must be paid. We say that in many instances the manner of acquisition has been covered or concealed over time and legalized or validated by title deeds. The following are just examples. That the most popular one is the forced removal. The other one is the systematic reduction of grazing land and limitation of stock growth. This is what happened to us 60 years ago. However, this is still happening in 2015. In a recent newspaper article, a mining giant that I will not name now told Mr. Sprenkan Masango that he has too many cows and has to restrict his cows to 40. Currently, Mr. Masango has about 48 cows and about 25 goats. So the man is saying that the rent must be impounded by the state. There are also instances we heard of beneficiaries having to walk the land and placing pegs wherever they wished. Apparently, Chairperson, there was a policy where the previous government allowed prospective beneficiaries to walk the land and not use any form of transport, to survey the land by walking it and placing pegs as far as they can go. So you find other beneficiaries walking the land from sunrise to sunset. Some would walk the land from sunrise to sunrise. You would hear some landowners ragging, say, if you want to know the extent and the breadth of our farm or of our land, you have to walk it 3 days. So, what we are saying really is that in these cases, fair market value principle can apply. because it might be difficult to prove the manner of acquisition. The ownership has been passed from one generation to the next. As I said earlier on, this has been conceived by ICD. Expropriation where nominal value can be paid. In order to solve the poor white problem, the masses of white citizens in the early 1920s were employed in post office, the railways, ISO, etc., and they received free housing and subsidized services. Just before 1994, these parasitas sold these houses to the beneficiaries at nominal values. With the influx of township residents to the suburbs, houses were sold at values many times higher than their actual values. In these cases, I also say I think nothing can be done as properties might have exchanged hands many times, and these were private sales between the individuals. However, there are individuals and NGOs that supported different causes before 1994 who acquired land for those specific causes or objectives. The land was acquired through long-term leases or through donation by the government. There was a trend where before 1994, a lot of land was donated to these NGOs. Some of them was purchased at nominal values. But if you can see now, the land is used for recreational purposes and for resort, and there's profit derived from these activities. We think that is an undue benefit. There are also regular reports of discrimination in practice in these we call them pristine properties, because they're very nice properties. I think there was one case where some members of a different faith wanted to become members of this NGO. They were told that if they want to become members, they must comply with the values of that NGO. We feel that we are a secular state. We cannot force people to denounce their faith or religions for them to join such NGOs in order to access the benefits of the land that is being offered. We think that this land or property must go back to the hands of the state and new applications be made and open to all members of the public or interested and affected parties to apply for expropriation and this nominal value be paid to those NGOs for improvements made on the property and the maintenance, because those land are quite prime and pristine and they were well kept over the years. Honorable Chairperson, on this one, expropriation without compensation, there are landowners who deliberately neglect their land for various malicious ends. You'll find that there's a landowner that owns two other prime properties, and the landowner also have another property that is not so prime. They deliberately neglect that land so that they can induce land invasion. So that once an informal settlement has grown, government will be compelled to purchase the land. I was involved in many cases where I even opened cases against the landowner who were even selling shares to individuals. But then once the settlement grew, government was forced now to go and put infrastructure there. Government was forced to put 4,000 houses there. So what you are saying, there are instances where we feel expropriation without compensation being implemented. Just in that instances, again, where mining companies neglect the land because it is no longer mineable or profitable. I'm sure we all know of the Zamaramas and the illegal miners in the West Rand and the East Rand, where there are gangsters fighting to mine whatever is left. We also have a similar challenge as Bahlakwaneba Mansinyama. After we have lodged a land claim with the Mpumalanga Land Claims Commissioner, they might, I think the Legal Resources Center also indicated this. The mine has a legal obligation in terms of the National Environmental Management Act to comply with the environmental management program, whereby after mining they have to rehabilitate the land. What the mine is doing now, they realize that we have submitted the land claim, they're no longer rehabilitating the land. What they're actually doing, they allow people to go and strip building material, copper, whatever structures that were there. We visited the area. The area is now a wasteland. So what the point that I'm trying to make here is that even minority land owners can also abuse the state. So with us, our fear is that the tombstone of our grandfather is in a particular piece of land. And from security, I wouldn't want to say scavengers, but the reclaimers will go there and also maybe maliciously desecrate our grandfather's tombstone. And once that happens, our claim is going to be weak. So what I'm saying, we have listened over the past few days, and we don't want to belabor this point, that this committee may not be mandated to put into a bill this compensation, sorry, this expropriation without compensation. So our suggestion as the Bahlakwane, we are going to take this submission and wait for the annual review of the Constitution, the CRC, the Constitutional Reviewing Committee. I think it does annually request for submissions. We will submit this request that we should consider certain instances to expropriate without compensation as punishment to malicious landowners. And I think the LRC did say that maybe in 2 years' time we may have to see a expropriation amendment act, whereby through the processes of the Constitutional Reviewing Committee, there might be a need to beef up or empower, as I said earlier on, empower the expropriation act to also have those powers to expropriate without compensation. But so far, we are happy with the fair market value, however it is calculated, and we support the bill to go through. As a conclusion, we wanted to make a statement that the white economic empowerment that took place over 3 centuries is seldom spoken about. We believe that the land reform process and expropriation for this process will pave the way forward for a true economic emancipation of the previously dispossessed mass. I take this.
Thank you very much, members. Kort en bondig. Which means succinct and to the point. Honorable Fan, I was totally followed by Honorable Sildani and Honorable Masang and Honorable Macias.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenter. Chairperson, mine does only one. What I want to find out from the presenter, how do you prove that the land is the fair market value? Because if I'm an owner of the land, I take the land as a value, you know, because it is my land, it belongs to me. How do you say that it's not fair? It is not deserved to be called fair market value. And that the last one, Chairperson, is the turn off. Of resolution without compensation, but they have explained it under 27.
Honorable Sultan, thank you. Honorable Sultan, thank you very much for the both exciting and inciting presentation. Somewhere regarding our request, you say a proposal that when expropriation takes place, compensation be categorized as following, depending on the nature of the dispossession. Am I right to say that when you talk about dispossession, you're talking in the past tense, in other words, where land was acquired as a result of someone being dispossessed And if so, what would persuade, what kind of guidelines would you like the government or this committee to use to decide what is fair market, value, nominal, and without compensation? Assuming that when you talk about disposition, you talk about something that happened, a long time ago. Yeah. Thanks. Thank you, sir. The next was Honorable Masango, followed by Mayor Maciel. Honorable.
Yeah, Chair, thanks, Honorable Presenter. I think it's coming from where I'm coming. And I can hear Emanzunyama, Simpiza and Jalungosito. Chair, I just want to, to question, I mean, just people should be careful with all these values that they attach, fair value, nominal value. I mean, sometimes you don't even come with calculation. How do you say this is a nominal value? How do you say this is a fair value? I think this will differ from always rather than just come. But I'm just so worried about the composition, without composition, and the constitution say when you appropriate, we have to compensate. And then again, you are making this bill illegal once you bring that in without composition.
Thank you, sir. Mayor,
thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks for the presenter. Mine is on the issue that you raised, that the budget for appropriation of property will never be enough and will never have enough one to do that. So from your point of view or from your position, what do you think the government should do in order to ensure that we expropriate as much as possible? And the second one is also just a comment to say, indeed, met some presenters here, they did indicate that the land was never bought by those who are having it. But unfortunately, as you put it there, after that they got the title deed. How would you say this doesn't belong to a person when that person has got a title deed with it? Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Your time for rejoinder.
Thank you, Honorable Jackson. Yeah, I think I'll go with Honorable Masango to say probably as lay people, we use, for example, fair market value, nominal value, we lose it. As I have seen with the experts here, the formula used to calculate is more complex than us, being able to explain. I think, in essence, what we are saying is what happened is that the deal as it is, with whatever advice it is getting, we are supporting it. I think probably that's where we need to stop. In fact, we submitted the presentation long before last week, and then we, when we listened to the deliberations by the honorable members and the legal aspect, we saw that we needed to change somewhere to make it in line. With regards to dispossession, here we were talking about dispossession, pre-1994. So, in essence, what we are saying is, if land was taken away from the previously disadvantaged, let me say, from the black people, we call it dispossession. It doesn't matter how. Whether those people were forcibly removed or systematically removed, that's how we understood this position. But I think here as well, we need to be careful because of aspects of how we use our weights going forward. Without compensation, I think this one we have said that in the meantime we are going to withdraw it. Until we see the processes of the annual review of the Constitution, so that we can make our inputs when the CRC sits. So in our submission, we draw that statement of expropriation without compensation. But it does not mean we don't believe in it. We actually believe in it and we're going to pursue it further. I think with regards to budget, if we see what happens with the willing buyer, willing seller principle, the budget was just too little for government to afford some of the land properties were inflated, so it couldn't afford. I think moving forward, with whatever budget that will be approved by Parliament for the Department of Land Affairs, with the expropriation as a tool, we think that much ground can be covered in that budget. Because I think government will have more power to determine, you know, what the price of the property will be of the land. Obviously, we probably the valuer, a general, being the final arbiter. So I think in the past, probably the bank was not enough, but going forward, we believe that the budget has to be there, will be enough use this expropriation as a tool.
Thank you very much, sir. From the ministry.
Chairperson, no, thank you, because what I really value about this presentation is the specific cases, because sometimes we get this abstract and legalistic, although we need to be legal in Parliament, and so I appreciate that. I'm not a lawyer, but what I would like to do is just use the occasion. My advice, but maybe the legal resources centre behind you, and I'm sure they will give better advice than I could possibly do, but I would advise against waiting for the annual review of the Constitutional Review Committee. There's nothing, basically the Constitution says that in the case of expropriation there should be compensation, but it doesn't say that the compensation has to be more than 5 cents, okay, or 10 cents or whatever. And it would have to be fair and just and equitable according to the circumstances. And therefore my Bedford lawyer advice, which is better, is that in the specific case that you're mentioning where you've got ancestral land, graves, things, and a money house, which is, and mentioned here by the way, but anyhow, which is depleting, because they know that there's a land claim on the thing, so they're just letting the land go. Now, I think better options might be the NEMA Act, because if they're failing to fulfill their obligations in terms of that. And so thank you for supporting what we've got here. But I would suggest that they maybe use the opportunity of a parliamentary hearing to make use of some of the colleagues that we've got here from, who are better equipped than some like myself, with a colleague from the department who could also perhaps assist with that. But thanks for raising those specific issues. I think it's very important that we have a grasp of those. But I say, fight compensation in this case.
That was a question. We now take the presentation by Mtata Ratepayers and Residents Association. If you could kindly quickly come to the hot seats. Gentlemen, the gentleman with the tie and the gentleman without the tie. You are equally welcome. You may proceed.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, we greet the Honourable Committee, Honourable Chair, all the members present here. We thank and appreciate the opportunity afforded to us to come and present our views on the bill before it is passed into a law, Honourable Chairperson. Preamble. The experts who drafted this bill have done a professional work of a very high quality and profile. Wow, splendid. They indeed deserve a big round of applause. However, the Appropriation Act should be made within the letter and the spirit of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, 1996, read the promotion of the Administration Justice Act, number 3 of 1000. In an adequate manner that will address the result of the past Russia's commercial laws and practice, considering the plight of the previous marginalized and disadvantaged communities. Honorable Chairperson, we're of the view that the willing seller, willing buyer principle should be scrapped off completely from the South African legislation, as it oppresses the very previously marginalized and disadvantaged people. In our view, criteria should be set up to expropriate the property or land and compensate in an adequate manner that redresses or addresses the imbalances of the past and gives equitable benefit to all the people of South Africa in this era of our democracy. Submission. Points raised. Suggested solutions on the bill. Chapter 1. Definitions and applications of the Act. Section 1. Points raised. The word expropriation, expropriation authority, expropriation register, and compensation have to be defined in the bill. Suggested have not been defined in the bill. Sorry. Suggested solution. The above words are the four pillars of the bill and should, therefore, be specifically defined for a proper understanding and compliance, as well as to avoid undue and unjust and inequitable benefits. Chapter 2, Section 3, Subsection 1, points raised. The powers of the minister to expropriate have to be explained. However, the rights, duties, and obligations of the appropriate owner or holder have not been specifically explained. Suggested solution. The rights, duties, and the obligations of the professional owner or holder, in our view, should be specifically explained in conjunction with the powers and duties of the minister to expropriate. Honorable Chairperson, it is our suggestion that the powers to expropriate be vested in the office of the president or the premier of each province, with the necessary delegation assignment of powers for its control, transparency, consistency, and accountability. Chapter 3, investigation and gathering of information for purposes of expropriation. Section 5, point raised. The only effort mentioned in the investigation and gathering of information for purposes of expropriation is the valua only. Adjusted solutions. The property or land in both rural and urban areas can be expropriated. Therefore, a separate team of different categories of experts should be authorized for an effective investigation, gathering of information for the purposes of expropriation, namely legal experts, traditional leaders in the case of rural areas, social workers, and surveyors, etc. In our view, Honorable Chairperson, the work of various experts as a team may reduce the unnecessary litigation in the expropriation process. Section 5.2, subsection 2A, points raised, in law, the word name is expressing a possibility or a wish. Therefore, it can not be used when authorizing a person to investigate and gather information for the purpose of expropriation. Suggested solution. In law, the word must is insisting or expressing something one is obliged to do, and something that should not be missed. The expropriating authority must authorize a person or persons with natural skills to enter upon property with themselves workers. Otherwise, the expropriating authority will not feel obliged to authorize persons to investigate or gather information for expropriation purposes, and thereby misses the boat. Consultation with the municipality during investigation. Section 6, subsection 1, points raised. The bill only provides for consultation with municipality during investigation, with no mention of the local community and traditional leaders who may also be affected by the investigation gathering of information for the purpose of expropriation. Suggested solution. The bill should also provide for broader consultation with the traditional leaders and local community, including all the relevant stakeholders during investigation. In our view, Honorable Chairperson, the suggested solution in section 3, section 1 of the bill, the expropriation authority should not be delegated to the level of the municipalities in the country. Chapter 4, section 7, point 3. The bill does not explain the rights, duties, and the obligations of the owner or holder of a right in the property before serving notice of intention to expropriate. But just that solution, the right and obligation of the owner or holder of a registered or unregistered right should be fully explained before serving the notices contemplated in Section 7 and 8 of the deal. Chapter 5, Section 12, Section 1, Point 8. In our view, on the chairperson, the relevant circumstances lack the manner, purpose, applicable law, and period on which the property or land was acquired. Suggested solution. The manner, purpose, applicable law, and period on which the land or property was acquired should be added as relevant circumstances to determine compensation. Section 14, Section 1, Point 8. The bill does not specify how to promote the achievement of equality, legislative and other measures designed to protect and advance persons or category of persons disadvantaged by unfair discrimination as contemplated in Section 9, Section 2 of the Constitution. Suggested solution. Compensation clause should be determined with strict consideration of the equality clause. Section 9, Subsection 2 of the Constitution read in Section 12, Subsection 1 of the Bill with added relevant circumstances, in a manner which redresses the result of racial discrimination of all. This should not mean to live in the past, but to use the past to determine the future of all people of South Africa, living in diversity and enjoying just and equitable benefits. Chapter 6, Determination by Court. Section 21. Point raised. The matters in the ordinary court, Honorable Chairperson, delay in a manner that can defeat the object of expropriation process. The bill does not specify type of court to adjudicate over expropriation matters, such as death solution. The bill should provide for special courts with specific time frames to expedite the expropriation proceedings so that government cannot be held ransom in its land reform and restitution programs, and that the object of progression is not defeated. Chapter 7, Section 24, Section 2A3, Point 8. The bill itself is currently in English only, which is a language barrier to the people who cannot write, read, or express themselves in English. Suggested solution. The bill should be in all the official languages of the Republic of South Africa, as contemplated in Section 6, Subsection 1 of the Constitution. However, for the purposes of Section 6A of the Constitution, public hearings should be conducted in all provinces, regions, local areas, addressing the people gathering, interpreting the bill in languages applicable in those areas. Section 24, Subsection 7, Point raised. It seems, on our position, as if there is no data captured for languages spoken in all the parts of the country for easy communication with the community in their respective areas and languages, suggested solution. The language of the addressee or area should first be established before a written communication is made. Section 27. Point raised, the lack of public hearings and language barrier in the bill may result in people committing offences due to ignorance of the law. Suggested solution, the period for broad consultation and public hearings should be extended so as to accommodate the majority of people who might be left out, and that we develop loyal and law-abiding citizens who are on the same wavelength with the law-making body. We should be mindful of the fact that ignorance of the law, Honourable Chairperson, may be an excuse when a matter is being adjudicated over by the court in this era of constitutional democracy and a rule of law. Extent of law repeal on the schedule, in bracket section 31, page 23 of the bill, point raised. In our view, the extent of law repeal on the bill does not provide for the expropriation matters already instituted and those pending in the court. Suggested solution. The bill should have a prospective effect or make provision for matters already instituted or pending before the court. In conclusion, Honorable Chair, we are of the view that the Honorable Committee should have decentralized the public hearings and consultation process on the bill and visited all the provinces, regions and local communities and hold various gatherings instead of centralizing it in Cape Town, so that the law can be easily applied at a certain date effectively within the community. Lastly, Honourable Chairperson, it is our humble submission that the period for the consultation process on the bill be extended for a broader and a proper consultation and deliberation matter is a thorny issue which requires dexterity to avoid the National Assembly and the government to walk into a barrage of unnecessary criticism. Thanks once again, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Committee, for the marvelous and historic opportunity afforded to us to come and express our views on the bill, and we are so grateful for superb accommodation and traveling arrangement. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, but there is my co-presenter, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you to the gentleman with the tie and loud to get a few words from the gentleman without the tie. Please.
Thank you, Chairperson, as well as the members of the committee. I think my colleague has really expressed what we are all about. But I just want to make a few comments. What sparked the Gather Repair Association is the willing fire wings list in terms of the municipal property rates of 2004. The prices have been so elevated to an extent people cannot afford it. That defeats the whole objective of addressing the question. Because if people cannot afford the rate, the municipality is going to attach the property. And then, by so doing that, you are actually denying them of their rights. So that's what's part of the internal rate. We are currently fighting with the provincial legislature on this matter. We know it's a national act, but a lot of people, poor as they are, they cannot afford the rate. And when you look at the amounts they are owing, so the willing seller will also say, it is the one that has compelled the government to look at this appropriation bill, which we support fully. Except, of course, together with the recommendations my colleague has just read. Just the other thing, which we feel need to be defined, the Act talks about just and equitable. To me, that's a bit undefined, because what is just and equitable? Similarly, compensation, which he talked about, because we agree compensation should not be monetary. Otherwise, our government will run out of money in fiscal. The way properties are, even the 20% that our colleagues spoke about, you know, people who actually value the property so to take care of the 20%. The other one is the public interest must be determined jointly. The commune must be involved to avoid the powers that might be misused. The municipalities, so that they take care of the traditional leaders as well as the communities. So if what is the public interest should be for everybody in that community. And we say the president should have the power to expropriate. So that is not a misuse today. Especially the chief was talking about this as well, and this has caused a lot of friction between the municipalities and the traditional leaders. The language barrier has been cited, and we feel happy to be given the opportunity to come to Cape Town to present it. Otherwise, we think the committee must do it also, because this matter of land question in South Africa is the only one. Expropriation is even more sensitive. But yes, my colleague has alluded, the committee must applaud for doing the good work. You're not sitting just here in front. We appreciate what you have done, because it's not easy. In those words, I also wanted to reiterate that we support the bill with the recommendation presented as well as by other committees. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and the committee.
I'd like to thank the presenters from the Mthatha Rates Association for the presentation that they made. Before I take members to contribute, there's just two remarks. I would like to assure you that the committee is very much aware of the concerns of ordinary citizens across our country. This is why in the year 2008, the Public Works Committee did, in fact, visit all provinces. in order to solicit the inputs of communities and stakeholders. As a result of that principle, we are also very much aware that not all the representatives of our communities throughout South Africa, irrespective of race, color, and creed, are able to come to Parliament. As a result of that, as a result of the public advert that we put out, we also made it clear that where possible, we would sponsor representatives of communities to come to Parliament to make that presentation. It's in that spirit and light that we're able to tell you to come and make your input, because we're aware that for this particular round, we are not able to visit all provinces. So the point that you highlight is one that's very close to us. It makes us aware of our responsibility that we have to ordinary people of the country. Members, the first hand that I've seen is that of Honorable Dreyer, followed by Honorable Masango, and then Filton. You may comment, sir.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I hear very clearly from both presenters that they are adamant about the willing by a willing syllabus form that must be scrapped completely. I heard you correctly. I just want to confirm that. And then based on that, if that is correct, you must be aware that this is a right that's guaranteed in the constitution of our country. Do you therefore propose that the constitution must be amended to do away with this right to private property? And secondly, the second presenter alluded to the fact that many poor people, and I assume you inquire with specifically black people, cannot afford rates because it's too high. But that means they are owners of their homes, of their properties. Now, often a home, your own home, is your biggest asset that many people will have. Now, if you just say, scrap that right, no willing buy, willing seller, so that they can be expropriated even if, say, they can't pay their rates, you will actually deny them of their one biggest asset that they have. Is that what you really want?
Honorable Member, thank you for your input. Honorable Masang.
Yes, I just got one question now. I mean, they are last slide, but it's not the one that they presented normally. Well, I say, lastly, in terms of question 32, the advantage and disadvantage of the Expropriation Act 2015 to have retrospective effect from 1994. I'm not sure what do they mean by retrospective from 1994. Maybe if you take any question as well.
Thank you, sir. Honorable Sultan. Thank you, sir. I must compliment the members of the Ratepayers and Residents Association for the explicit manner in which they have taken the bill, you know, literally clause by clause. It reminds me of a presentation we had the other day, and it makes it quite simple for us as a committee to deal with their input. We appreciate that. A few points. First one is a question. You suggest that communities should be consulted. How would you suggest that communities be consulted during the process of expropriation? Because our understanding is that communities would be represented, you know, in one way or the other, either by chiefs or by associations of ratepayers or something. What process would you suggest? And the other question is, you query the fact that not all languages have been used, you know, in bills. And then the question of process. I know the chairperson already alluded to this. Are you trying to say that you feel that there has not been sufficient consultation and that perhaps we should be one as a committee that people could raise their hands once this becomes an act and say the procedure was not sufficiently followed to their satisfaction. You haven't quite explained to us what suggestion you want to make when you say the term just and equitable is ambiguous. I know that that's not the adjective you use, but that's the sense that you gave us. How would you suggest you know, this be defined in order to meet the requirements of the constitution? And you make a suggestion that public interest must be determined jointly with the community. That's a very, very interesting point for you to make. And can you suggest perhaps what guidelines, because the bill itself does give some guidelines, you know, to determine that, you know, the public interest is defined in the bill, and how would the community, as such, broad as it is, you know, be enjoined in order to help define to determine the public interest? Would this be a political process or what? And lastly, you say the rights of the owners, which is a very, very critical point, rights of the owners who are about to be expropriated should be explained. Are you talking in the context of the process? In other words, you say that the bill should say that they should force as well whosoever expropriation authority would be at the gate to explain first, you know, the rights of the owners. Is this what you're trying to say? Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. The delegation, your chance for a reply.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Chief Bishop. I will attempt to answer the questions, but you will also try and attempt the way it was we hear. Firstly, the willing buyer, willing seller, as a principle, we have seen it is not working. I am not saying that we should violate the constitution, but we should try and address, because I think we are introducing this bill because the principle has taken us this far down the road. Hence, I was saying, even there with our municipalities, we did not say people do not want to pay rates, but maybe look at, because in the past, there used to be municipal values as well as selling values. That's how it was kept. So that was the intention, is not to sell for this owner, is to raise the property. But once it is, well, the principle of buying, of selling, I can sell you my house for $1 million, whereas in the market value it can be $5 million. Because it's difficult to determine whether this is an arm's length transaction or not. Because that's the pillar, that is this an arm's length transaction. When you sell to your brother, it's not an arm's transaction, but I think I suppose I need the money as well, and he also needs the house. So there is a gray area, because the purpose must come out. I think expropriation with the market conditions, I do not think they go together. Because you have determined already that you want to expropriate, because it presupposes that the willing buyer principle it cannot be achieved because of the fiscal, of what is asked to the fiscal. So I'm not saying it must go out, but for the intent and purpose of the act, it should be looked at differently. And then they can come and approach, I think, the good minds in this country to look at how we address that. I'm not saying that is the solution, but the willing buyer, that's where it has not addressed it adequately. Then one of the poor people, as I'm saying, some people, for instance, they are in pension. Some, they got their properties from, you know, from different ways, maybe as an inheritance, as a home. You know, the children who have got, homes that are taken by children. Those children cannot pay the rates on the basis. You know, so there are many things, but it should be looked, because you want to sustain that family. But the willing buyer, willing to, because in some instances that house was inheritance, I did not buy it, but my parents left it for me. And maybe there is no money to carry on with it. So it should be something that looked at it. But I am not suggesting we violate the constitution on a willing buyer, but an act can stipulate that for the purposes of this act, this is how it gets defined. Then the rate players, I think he will come to this 3-1994. I'm not going to comment on it. Then the process of communicating expropriation, the language, it says somewhere in the act that the person must say how he wants to be addressed. But if they are expropriating, you must find out the language of that person's property you want to expropriate. Then communicate in the language that he or she will understand. So you have got an honor as the expropriation authority to find out, what it becomes sort of diminutive that you come to me, you want to expropriate your street African. for argument's sake. So you have got an intelligence probably. You first understand the language so that you come and tell me I have the business in an Allah language that I understand. But that means you have refreshed to who the property belongs, so that it looks a situation that you intend to be in an amicable manner. Then this thing about the language, I think it also addresses that we have got less than languages. In you know, certain acts, they're not the same. I will just give it. You know, if you look at Pluma, who are at the municipal meeting in Mtata, and if the chiefs said they will not support Pluma, with although it has intent, a good intent, because the chiefs, it was not explained to them. You know, our democracy is centered around public participation. And we try and think about that. Then our good structure in the constitution, it defeats the whole objective. The pillar of our democracy is public participation, and we appreciate it. Well, you get consulted, you debate, you get convinced, and you're part of the process. Then this other one, the term just equitable, as I've said, it is very difficult to determine what is just. This value general of ours, I think it has got to be, it has got to be, maybe it's one of these functions where it goes there to really come up with a definition. But if you're looking at the value, they can value for the purposes of selling. They can value for the purpose of raising the property. They can value for different reasons. So they should be seen so that we can really in a way define what the parliament understands as a fair. Like this question of, if this person wants money and the government got no money, gives him land instead, is that fair or not fair? Because that person wants money, and you give him or her land. Is that deemed not fair because he wants money, and everybody has agreed here that if you give the money tomorrow, the money is finished, and the land benefits the successor. The public interest, as I was commenting, the public interest, honorable member, it's a... You know, we're wanting to run away from a situation where a group of the crony, I think that's the term honorable Deputy Mehiru Ali used, the cronies want to appropriate land for their purpose. It should really just to stop that kind of thing. We have seen what has happened in the past with some corrupt activity. So that the people, if it's a mall, you know, in Mshata there was a development in Israel which was stopped because the beneficiaries were going to be cancer. And the people of the land were saying, we want to ensure our people get what we get out of this whole development. On that camp, had nothing that would have got back over in that stadium in Northwest. So that it goes forward to the generations, you know, so that it's not a me benefiting towards a metaphor at the moment. And then this other one, right of owners, to be able that it be explained. You see, if you... You know, we were talking about this thing, the government, if you, like the municipality, if the municipality owes them, they charge you interest on what you owe. But if they keep your money, maybe you're overpaid, they pay you no interest. It remains the same. So what we're saying is that there should be redress on par. If you are going to expropriate, come tell me, what am I right? You know, if the spending we are contesting the valuation, you value the product, as a value, I can't value property for it. This is how the government, because we cannot ignore that our people are coming from the fucking past. Some of these new laws, they do not understand what they mean, including myself, thinking that they're millennials somebody. But it should be explained so that they understand what this matter is very, 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 so that they can understand that if the property is not this problem, I'm not here, what are the reasons? But where can I go? I think that's what we want to explain. Because we approve expropriation. Because it's said in the constitution, land will be expropriated. I'm not saying how. But now you give this land for this, that he is heavy, that the government is not paying. Well, tomorrow people say, our government is already taking our land. You know, sometimes you explain what is the intention, what are your rights, if you're not heavy, where can you go with all that?
Thank you, sir. Your concluding remarks.
Oh, thank you so much, Mr. Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, just one response, I think, which is left. It is a retrospective effect. In our presentation, we were talking about retrospective effect, referring to the schedule on the bill, page 23 of the bill. That is only why we talked about a retrospective event. I mean, we worry about a vacuum, because there is no vacuum in law and life. Where if now all the previous expropriation acts are repealed wholly, so now there are matters which are pending before the court, and which have already been instituted before the court. So which means now there will be a vacuum. In fact, this is a suggestion we have come to suggest here. So we are worried that really perhaps that may compromise perhaps even decisions of the court, because now there is a vacuum, because there is no act in between now, because this deal has not yet passed. So now there is a vacuum. So we're just worried about that vacuum. Perhaps the Honorable Committee, because we believe that they do have much experience than we do. So definitely we hope that they will see how to address it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, sir. Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much. The first point, just to reach, this is an issue that keeps coming up. This is the Constitution. Okay, you can read it as magnifying glass. You won't find the willing seller, willing buyer. Anyway, you turn it upside down, read it, whatever. There's no willing seller, willing buyer. What it is no one can be deprived of property except in terms of the law of general application, and no law may permit arbitrary deprivation. Okay, that's what it says. Okay. So those who tell us that somewhere in the Constitution there's the willing seller, willing buyer, I haven't read the Constitution. And I'll, just to clarify, because it keeps coming. So just to reassure you that we're not reversing willing seller, willing buyer process in the Constitution. It is not such thing. What we are doing, though, is in the process of moving towards an expropriation, we do allow for, do require, in fact, a period in which there's a negotiation. Because that's a quicker way of moving. You want to put in a road or whatever, it's much quicker than to go through this process to find a willing seller and a willing buyer. And very often ESCOM has lots of, well, there's not so much money anymore, but Transnet has money or whatever. And for them, a delay in the process, going through this process, costs more. So they're interested in finding willing sellers and so on. But what this legislation will help them to do is to approach potential willing sellers with the potential threat of expropriation. So that they know that they're not going to sit around for 2 years, 4 years, trying to deal with a potential willing seller who is stalling and stalling in order to drive up the price. That if they're seriously engaged in a negotiation process, it's not getting anywhere. This act will enable them, and it's a constitution compliant act bill for them, and we're convinced of that. You've made a number of very specific points, and obviously one can't deal with them in detail here, but through the committee, and certainly as the department and ministry, we will make sure that the specific points that you're raising, we'll have a good look at them. But in terms of the consultation process and the language and all of that, I think those points are well taken. How we embody them into legislation, but it's a point that's come up for a number of other inputs as well, to ensure that invisible rights are made visible, for instance, all those things. And they can't be made visible if you're talking in a language, in my language, which a community doesn't understand at all. So it's inherent in what we need to do, and so we will certainly take that very seriously. In terms of doing, this is a Section 76 bill. So apart from the National Assembly and apart from the point that the chairperson has made that back in 2008, the National Assembly Portfolio Committee did do a sort of national tour. I can't speak for the NCO Presidential Committee, but they will be under an obligation to hold hearings at least in every province and to then report back. So whether they go further than that and have more community meetings and so on, well, it's up to the Select Committee to decide how to handle it. But you're absolutely right. It's very important to show that there's just some retrospectivity. Again, I would need to be advised by my colleagues. I think generally retrospectivity is a problem to make legislation retrospective in its actions. But certainly, currently, the existing... So it's the 1975 Act that's referred to in the schedules, and then amendments to it. Okay. So currently, expropriations are happening less in terms of that act, okay, and more in terms of specific acts enabling this minister or this province
to expropriate. And if there's a challenge, the court will look at the constitution, and particularly the property clause, okay, to see whether this particular minister, guided by his or her particular piece of legislation, is also at the same time in the absence of this bill becoming a law, is constitutionally compliant. So we think that that's how that issue that you're raising is addressed in the interim period between getting this enacted. Thanks, Jeff. And thank you also to the colleagues for coming from Mahata and raising the question. Okay. We need an offline discussion about public works and Mahata, but that can be another.
I would like to thank the Mahata Rates Association. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Solidariteit. There's no easier than the Nexus is Puhnimarum, the practice. Ons heet u welkom, zodra u weer gereed is, ga je maar beginnen. Dank je.
Bedankt u voor het stel. Honorable Chairman and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity to present here. Some brief remarks on solidarity before I get into the bill before us. Solidarity is a trade union. We have about 140,000 members in industries all across the economy. We are also part of the Solidarity Movement, an association of organizations that grew from Solidarity, which focuses on the workplace, and these are the organizations that focus on the rest of the, shall we say, needs of our members. And if we add all the members together, we are in excess of 300,000 paying unique members. We have been participant in the process leading up to this version of the expropriation bill before, and we have also before on various other matters with bills also that bear on property rights gave some inputs. And on myself personally, I am head of Solidarity Research Institute, and we have most recently in 2014, we compiled a report on 14 important pieces of legislation and policies with a bearing on property rights. So that issue today is this expropriation bill of 2015. It's tabled as a procedure for defining the legitimate exercise of power by state functionaries to expropriate, that is to take people's stuff. The state may do so is power afforded it by the Constitution, and it is it's virtually impossible to consider a state the channel of expropriation. So that is not an issue today, whether or not a state, and specifically in South Africa, can or cannot expropriate. We are faced with a more simple and more complicated question, if we wish, which is one on content of how and when shall we allow the state to expropriate. And the state is always embodied in functionaries. So how shall we allow functionaries to expropriate? Fortunately, sometimes the questions themselves provide part of the answer, and this is no exception. By inquiring about the proper procedure for expropriating, we are acknowledging a departure from some default position, and the default position, the automatic position, and natural position if you wish, is that set of the sanctity of private property ownership, that we do not, after all, have private property because some act grants us the right to property. Private property exists, and it is just unless proven otherwise. And this is what we seek in an expropriation act. A constitutional, well-defined, rational, fair, and socially beneficial piece of legislation for departures from this automatic position. Yet the bill before us today is eminently not constitutional. It is not well-defined. It is not rational, it is not fair, and it is not socially beneficial. And we often say that it is undesirable and that it should be rejected. or reworked declaration, to which one which I will have some comments later. So in what follows, I shall outline five of the most serious shortcomings of the bill. But before I do so, let me make a brief observation on, we can say, political economy, on the practical realities. Deputy Minister Cronin is reported to have remarked this bill is not about expropriation without compensation. That, I read, he said, is allegedly the position of the EFF, expropriation without compensation, and we've heard some other presentations today also at the same point. So a test then presents itself to determine whether this legislation, this bill, furthers the rule of law or the rule of men. We can ask ourselves if it wasn't the current functionary of state, Deputy Minister Cronin or someone else, for example the EFF, someone from the EFF, how far would someone with this idea of expropriation without compensation be able to go under this legislation to achieve their end? And I would suggest to you that this bill will allow them to go very far. They would have a hard time paying no compensation at all. It is simply possible to pay only 5 cents or so, as Mr. Cronin indicated, but they would have a hard time doing that in general, but they would be able to go very far with paying very little. They would be able to do so called courtesy of five serious deficiencies. Firstly, the bill in Section 1 leaves wide open the grounds for expropriation, and it goes beyond what is delineated or what is expressly provided for in the Constitution. The public purposes there and so forth. It goes beyond, it seems to go beyond that. Second, the bill makes for arbitrary exercise of power, in that it does not require at the proper junctions reasons stated, expressed in writing to some suggested victim of expropriation. So the bill does not provide for reasons at the proper junctions which can be tested in a court of law for objectivity and rationality and so on. The third is that it is administratively unjust. In where, again, at certain junctions expropriation passes or property passes to the state, even before the validity of such suggested expropriation has been established. And furthermore, the expropriation and the ownership passes not necessarily before compensation, not necessarily only after compensation has been paid. Fourth, the compensation is insufficient. It is correct that market value, in terms of the Constitution, should not be the only factor determining what something should be expropriated at or the amount. But it is an established principle, it is in the current expropriation act, and there is no reason why it cannot be incorporated in this version, that a solatium, that is some compensation for losses suffered as a result of the expropriation, should also be included as a factor for determining the compensation. Furthermore, the history of the property, which should constitutionally be taken into consideration when the expropriation is contemplated, should be much better defined in a bill such as this. It should be given an idea what is the positives and what is the minuses, which factors will add to the compensatory value and which will detract from it. When the history is considered, what does it mean? It should be explained. Otherwise, we again make room for arbitrary exercise of power. And five, the justice of the justice is restricted, justice in this matter. Justice in Section 21 of this bill reverses what we may call the coming of age of the courts in South Africa, where the courts is given the power, or given the power, can a bill give a court the power? We ask, well, at least it is suggested that courts should limit themselves to speaking on the amounts of compensation and not on the validity of the justness, on consideration of the reasons given for the expropriation. That is certainly problematic, that the cause may be restricted in this sense. Chairman, depending on who is in charge and who does the expropriation, the outcomes will be very different. And this is a rule of men and not a rule of law. Now, I have referred to the necessity of an expropriate liability for the site. So the issue at hand as to what form such legislation should take so that it may facilitate rule of law and not rule of men. It follows from my point earlier that the bill should be reformed along the following lines, five lines again. And I won't go into too much detail here for the reason that very much of what I would say if I were to go into more detail is the same or very much similar to what the IRR and some other people have already said in this forum, so not for repetition then. Firstly, grounds for expropriation should be limited to those expressly allowed for in the Constitution. Second, the victims of intended expropriation should be provided with reasons before expropriation is effected, so that it may be investigated if they are arbitrary. Third, as far as administrative justice goes, payment should be made before appropriation, a full compensation before expropriation, and a much longer notice period should be given, as well as the reconsideration. I'm not sure how this should, can be done, but this must be investigated, that the cost of legal proceedings must be relieved in some way. Chairman, the bill goes very far in what it can expropriate. This is not only about big farms or big companies. It goes right to small homeowners, people who only in the past 20 years could have become owners of something. This bill can just as well apply to them. And so the cost of legal proceedings is going to be prohibitive in the currently provided, as are currently provided for in this bill. And that is not justice. And fourth, the compensation should be expanded to include a solatium, and it should also define the positive or negative impact of how that history that is going to be taken into consideration will impact the compensation. And fifth, the courts must not be denied the ability to adjudicate on the validity, the rationality of an expropriation. They must be... a victim of expropriation should have full access to the courts of law, to a dispute to be adjudicated. And this cannot, we cannot make an exception under expropriation and expect those exceptions not to then be suggested in other spheres of society as well. I'm not the first to suggest these changes. I've mentioned the IR and others as well. What is alarming, though, is that the IRR proposal and some of the other proposals, things I've suggested now, is not being accepted, even though I'm not at all the first to make them. The IRR proposal, for example, still gives wide powers of expropriation. It includes for property unjustly in someone's possession. So you can expropriate, even under the IRR's bill, unjustly acquired property. It also isn't bound to market value. So, depending on the positive and negative factors, could still be at only 5 cents for example, an unjustly acquired property. It gives room to the discount factors. But it includes a solatium, an amount for losses and trouble, a reasonable measure. It acknowledges the court's power to adjudicate disputes, as any proper legislation should. And it ensures administrative justice for victims. I was very intrigued to watch Mr. Julius Malema as he left the courts today when his case was thrown out, and I can quote him here. He said that a rotten process leads to rotten outcomes. Well, if we have a rotten process without administrative justice, we will not have justice served. So with such a proposal at hand, these suggestions about improving the bill, why aren't they not graciously accepted? From where solidarity stands, it appears as if these well-intentioned suggestions are frowned upon. And this is concerning, even more so when they're together with scores of other legislation undermining property rights, including the Land Holdings Bill, the Promotion and Protection of Investment Bill, the Property Valuation Bill, the Private Security Industry Bill, and many others. You must read legislation in their context, the other legislation that is being passed, to get the thrust of where things are going. Because it seems like we might be going to the rule of men. So that gives us an idea of how these men will then implement their newfound powers. asking people to accept the expropriation bill is like saying, give me a right to unjustly take your house, but rest assured, I want to use it. If I were to make a proposal of this nature to, for example, Minister, Deputy Minister Gonia, that I will take his house, I should contact with that, but I won't use it, it is hard to think that we might, in the end, agree to this. Now, why should the people in South Africa accept it? Why is it insistent upon that they should waive their access to courts, waive administrative justice, waive by a specific definition of grounds for expropriation, waive the right to receive compensation not only for the property but also for the loss and trouble as a result of the expropriation? Do not say, trust us, we will treat you justly and exploit your property rights you have waived. That is not a good proposal. Earlier I mentioned that the EFF wants expropriation without compensation. Others have said the same today. I need not have singled the EFF out. If I were to implement the bill, you might suspect that I would have implemented a very little of it in a way that much more fundamentally respects property rights for all. Similarly, Mr. Cronin and Deputy Minister Cronin and Minister Nersi's affiliations to the South African Communist Party is well known. And it is a tenet of that ideology that the more the means of production vest in the state, the better. We must, since we are moving to a rule of men and not a rule of law, we must consider the men. And the possible men, other men will follow to implement. Responsible people do not accept the bill that is trust us. That would be a rule of men, not a rule of law. With such a bill, we are going to see great economic harm and abuses of power. Those abuses will not be limited to me. All to white people, it will be a rotten process with rotten outcomes for all enemies of the state. The cronies, in the words of the speaker sat in this chair before me, the cronies will have their way and not the law. What we need, because as I said earlier, there must be an expropriation law. An expropriation act, there must be a new one, a constitutionally compliant one. What we need is a bill that is clear about three things. People will be able to keep what is justly theirs. Second, people will lose but be well compensated for what the state justly needs. And third, people will lose what is not theirs, even for 5 cents or nothing, for what they unjustly acquired. Unfortunately, this bill does not guarantee any of it. And so I think there are good proposals for remediating the expropriation bill. It certainly is necessary, and I would hope that they are taken to heart.
So Terti, thanks for your input. Honourable members, Stole, Honourable Stole first, and then Honourable Tule, followed by Honourable Mayor Marcel, and Honourable Matilda, you did raise your hand. Yeah. And Honourable Sultani. Shall we start, Honourable Sultani?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. But I'm very upset, Chairperson, because I have been reminded that we are from the dark days of apartheid. I remember when we were oppressed. But I think the gentleman that was talking to us today is not talking to the bill, because he's about to talk to issues of the bill and the objection of the objective of the bill. But as it to be Chairperson, and I'm worried. If you Chairperson on presentation 1.4, so that is not said that the expropriation bill of 2015 weakens property rights by increasing the scope for local participation in decision for expropriation. expanding grounds for expropriation and unduly limiting the likely compensation to be paid out to victims of expropriations. But the expropriation talking about the compensation, but this is unduly limiting the likely compensation to be paid out to the victim of the expropriation. What does that mean? Exactly, if you can explain, what does that mean? And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of 1.51. The objections by the Institution of Race relation to the current cable expropriation bill called mass merit. If you can answer that one, because I don't understand what that means, because he referred to IRR. Because we are not saying what you want to say, it's not proper. It's proper in his sense. But if you check the bill, there's nothing that he referred to the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Member, thank you. Honourable Traya.
Mr. Chairman, yes, through you to the presenter. Just want to say that there has always been an Expropriation Act. And now the current bill, the bill before us, to try and make the expropriation bill to bring it in line with the Constitution. That is where, so we've got to address those issues and make sure that it's in line with the Constitution, the spirit and the letter of it. Now, the Constitutional Court has already ruled, and I'm referring to the Hafidji judgment, that expropriation can occur before compensation has been paid, provided it's paid as soon as possible thereafter. Now, that to me is problematic, and I would like to hear proposals from your side about how to address that. Should that be written, something written into the bill to address that problem? And then I'd also like to hear, on that second point, your comments on the transformative role of the Constitution, where it explicitly states, makes provision for transformation of ownership and land. I'd like to hear a comment on that. Thank you.
Honourable Member, thank you. Honourable Masir.
Thank you, Honourable Chen. This is a very disappointing presentation. 21 years into democracy, we still have this type of mentality. It's really difficult or even disappointing, therefore indicated. On the second paragraph, the presenter said they are on the interest of the workers. But throughout the presentation, there is no way where they talk about the interest of the workers. But instead, they are speaking on the interest of the minority that are holding land as we speak now. Because that is what we are trying to redress when we talk about expropriation of land. And then 1.4, it talks about the bill, the expropriation bill of 2015 is going to weaken the property rights. Can you explain this? What does it mean by this? And indeed, I don't know, I don't think this was read properly, that this very same bill, because there is no way in which where it says people are not going to have the power to go to court wherever they are not satisfied. It doesn't stop anyone from doing that. I'm not sure whether he did read the whole thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I'm going to encourage Mr. Smith to sit down. His bag is not doing his fine well. Honourable Mutebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I really disappointed about the presenter in 2015 when we've been reminded where we come from. The presenter really is here to tell us about the IRR, which is irrelevant to this bill. And reminding us whether it's a rule of law or it's a rule of man. What does it mean? I mean, I don't want to return that. And to mention also justice, that is restricted. I don't know where that is in this presentation. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, members. A small point from the chair.
presenters are in their right to reference their presentations with previous presentations that have been made. If I understood the presenter correctly, there are portions in his presentation where he says that he agrees with the presentation that was made by the Institute of Race Relations. So saying that is within his right. Members might not like to hear what he says, but my responsibility is to protect his right to say it. Honorable Fulton.
Thanks very much, Chair. Contrary to how my colleagues feel about the presentation, for me, this is liberation. In the sense that, in the New South Africa, we're able to talk across the table, even though we differ so much. Contrary to what used to happen before 1994, when if you differed with the government, you had to say that under the table in a very, very dark room. And this puts us in a strong position to be able to look at the interests of everybody in the country, including the minority. When the presenter says that, you know, this bill will, in a sense, compromise, you know, access to property, if we can interpret it that way, he's actually saying the opposite, because the definition of public interest is exactly about that. Given the status quo that says there's very few people who own a large chunk of South African land. If you're true to what you're saying, then you should concede that you're actually contradicting yourself, unless you say this right to property should be confined to the few who own the larger percentage of South Africa. This deal is exactly about achieving what you say, you know, where you stand for. So it is very much constitutional. You should actually be supportive, but I'm not persuading you. I'm just stating, you know, how I look at it, unless you are not honestly stating the point when you say that you believe that rights to property should be protected. In South Africa at the moment, we have got a situation whereby the majority of people hardly have access to own property, exactly because of the previous, you know, dispensation. And this bill is about correcting that, the public interest element of it. And then the public pebbles, I'm dealing with the issue of unconstitutionality of the bill, you know. The public pebbles element of it is about helping people to have access to government services through acquisition of land by government. That's what it's about. And this is very, very constitutional in my interpretation. What used to obtain before was highly unconstitutional, because it was a few people who had access to meaningful civil, you know, public services. Ni blank as me, you know, you couldn't go onto that train and so on. But this is exactly about doing that. So you read the South African Constitution, agreeing with it or differing with it is something else. But if you read the Constitution, you'll find that this really is in so many ways, you know, when constitutional. Now, lastly, Chair, about the limited use, let me use that term, use of courts here. Even though the bill itself may say that the court's you know, function would be to determine the value, the common opposition, and I think somewhere in the Constitution is associated, I think it's question 33. No, it may not be that. Let me not confine myself there. But constitution and the common law situation is that any citizen can approach the court for any purpose whatsoever. I think the clause you're referring to is more about defining the functions of the court that would be involved in this matter. But if person feels that the validity, you know, the such of the whole process warrants challenging, I'm sure there is no constitutionally compliant law in South Africa that would prohibit citizens from approaching, you know, the courts. So that's the point I wanted to kind of say, to say that we feel as a committee that to a large extent this bill is very much constitutional. We admit that there could be, you know, a few points that need to be tailored here and there, but by and large, it is definitely about that, because the very purpose of coming up with this bill was to make sure that we close the gaps from a constitutional compliance perspective of the 1975 Act. So maybe we need to look at it with more positive eyes. But personally, I really appreciate your contribution. It's been a big eye-opener to me. Thank you.
Honorable President, thank you very much. From the Honorable Dreyer, I'll indulge you.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the sake of opportunity. And I just wanted to add on something that from the previous speaker, my colleague Mr. Fitani. He talked about the right to go to court of the person to be expropriated, if that's a better word. Now, that's fine, but we must go further than that. He acknowledges that, and I agree with that, but it places too big an onus and a burden on the owner to be expropriated. It's lengthy, even costly. And I think if you're going to be expropriated, you may not like it very much, but it's going to happen. But then if you want to go to court about it, I think it should be at the expense of the state, so that the burden is not on the individual property owner. And I would also like to hear a comment from the presenter on that one. How do we protect the individual property owner, which may be a small person, against a big state?
Honourable Member, thank you. The department or the ministry?
Thank you. First of all, despite what the presenter thought, I actually feel exactly like the Honourable for timing. I welcome the fact that solidarity has come along and has presented its case. And contrary to what you were saying, we took very seriously the Institute of Race Relations submission, not just in hearing, but on receiving, and we took the trouble as through the department of employing senior counsel to go thoroughly through it and to get an independent view of it. So the fact that we didn't agree with it didn't mean that we didn't take its input or your input seriously. So just to reassure you that you know, this is a democratic South Africa, but many of us fought for, and we're proud of it and intend to defend everyone's right to hold opinions and perspectives. If I could just, you are right, of course, that and as the Chair has correctly said, you absolutely have the right to rely considerably on other inputs, and yours basically follows the lines of the Institute of Race Relations submission, which was more substantial, but yeah. So let me just run through the five issues, okay, just and speaking to you, but obviously also to the committee members, for their consideration, because it's the committee and not myself. The first thing is, the argument is that we're going way beyond the Constitution. And in particular, if you look carefully at the Institute of Race Relations submission, essentially that relates to the definition section of the bill, and particularly under public interest. And it's true that we have added a clause or a sentence to the definition of public interest. So the Bill of Rights, the property clause, is public interest includes the nation's commitment to land reform and reforms to bring about equitable access to all South Africa's natural resources and other related natural resources. So it includes, and therefore it's intending not a complete definition, but it's trying to indicate the sorts of things that would be encompassed within public interest. Okay. What was added in the draft is, and other related reforms in order to redress the result of past racial discriminatory laws or practices. Now, is there anyone in the committee, or in solidarity with that matter, who finds offence in that addition, which we think really just builds in the spirit of what the property clause is saying? If there's a strong feeling that we should drop that, that's fine. It doesn't alter things, because we're quite sure the Constitutional Court will interpret public interest to include those wider definitions. But it's on that addition that we're being told that we're unconstitutional, because we're saying related reforms in order to redress the result of past racial discriminatory laws and practices. Surely that goes to the heart of what we're trying to achieve in this bill, and in general, what the Constitution compels government to do, to be transformational and to address the possibility. So that's why we had a problem with that particular issue. Now, there are a couple of other details in the hierarchy, but fundamentally, that's the objection. The further it says that there's no requirement that the reason for expropriation should be provided. And I would ask the members of the committee to have a look at Clause 7,
sub 2, C and D. So, when, first of all, there's a compulsion in this act that, first of all, any expropriation authority must undertake a serious investigation. And if in a challenge, a subsequent court challenge, it can show that it was whimsical and there was no serious attempt to consult people, property owners, those without registered property rights and so on, if there was no serious intention, then that act of expropriation is very vulnerable to being found administratively unjust. But further than that, the notice of intention to expropriate is quite explicit. The description of the purpose for which the property is acquired, and the effect at which the document setting out the purpose may be inspected, and particulars of the purpose may be obtained during both business hours, the reason for the intended expropriation of that particular property, etc., etc., etc. In other words, there's obligation, in terms of what we're saying, to explain to those expropriated, or who might not be directly expropriated, but might be affected by an expropriation, including other departments, municipalities, to indicate the reasons for the intention to expropriate. So I'm not sure why we've been told that it's not, you know, that there's a problem in that respect. Then on to the last one, Prana Health. Again, we've had a fairly full discussion on this. And we don't necessarily have a serious problem with it. I mean, for instance, in the class input and the legal resources sense input, it was pointed out, and then also some of the more concrete examples that were given to us, it was pointed out that it can't just be the market value of the property that's taken into account. If small farmers were using the particular property for their livelihoods, then compensation should take that into account to ensure that the community remains a sustainable community, the individual remains. If that's what it means, but Tanakal tend to mean something a little bit different, Salasi, okay. And again, I'm not a lawyer. But we're not insensitive, and we don't think either the Constitution and so on is insensitive. So what is the current use of the property would inform the kind of compensation. If the property is just lying idle and not being used, as one of the examples is provided, then that should be taken into account when compensation is required. On the other hand, if it's the livelihood of, let's say, a small farmer, black or white, then compensation should take that into account and not just the... So we think it's covered in the existing criteria, which are not exhaustive in the Bill of Rights, and which we repeat. But again, we can discuss the details of that, because obviously one doesn't want to leave people worse off who are absolutely dependent on the property as a result of expropriation. And I'm quite sure that any court and constitutional court, and already there has been a jurisprudence in this respect, take into account these matters, and just and equitable includes those dimensions rather than the narrow Salatin thing. In terms of, which is more the issue that the Honourable Dreyer raised in a question to a colleague from Solidarity, we are mindful of the issue of costs in taking a matter to court. I think we need to be sensitive to that. That's why we were saying that maybe we should look. That's why we're saying that there should be an automatic referral in case of a dispute around the compensation, and the state should have that. It's not in the bill, but we're proposing that we should seriously look at that. Also, have arbitration as a way also of sorting out some of these matters without having to go to court. But what we were advised by some of the, particularly the Weber Wenzel advice, was that costs awarded, something that courts don't like to be taken away from them. They like to make judgments on costs based on the specific case in front of them. So we have got proposals here in terms of liability, in terms of the 20% variance and so forth as to where the costs would fall and so on. And Weber Wenzel is suggesting to us that would be unconstitutional and would be, courts don't like us to stay into that space in terms of costs. So we need to think about that. But yes, absolutely, how do we ensure that a poor community that battles, you know, with costs and resources and so on, and where it's being unfairly treated by the states, that it has access to court and so on. So we need to make sure that we
are not closing down that option without necessarily defining it in detail about how to proceed. The thing about that expropriation happens without any compensation, or can happen without any compensation, and the compensation can come much later, is based a bit on a misunderstanding and a little bit on a problem that we need to address. So currently, there's a distinction between ownership and taking possession. And so we're agreeing, as the department, that on taking ownership, that compensation should become payable, rather than on possession. I think that's what we're suggesting. Or alternatively, that there should be a minimum delay between, that there should be a defined period between which there's ownership and possession. And I think my advisors will help in that respect. But we're sensitive to that issue, that the state could have taken ownership but not yet possession, and then that thing, no one's winning, and someone's left without any compensation, high and dry, and top position sets place, at which point currently the compensation is paid. So we either need to address it in one way by saying that it's when the ownership happens, or alternatively that we need to shorten the period, and in fact we probably need to do both. So that's the detail we can discuss. But the fact that we're sensitive to there's a misunderstanding about the 80% issue. What we're allowing is for 80% of the final offer. Okay, there's a dispute. The state is offering finally as a result of interaction and so on. State is offering offering a certain amount, and that's what's got to. And the expropriation happens. We're saying that when that happens, and bear in mind the qualifications I've just introduced, when that happens, at least, we're not saying 80%, at least 80% of that final offer must be paid, so that the individual or the entity is not left high and dry. We're saying at least, because there are cases where expropriation happens, and there's a whole lot of unpaid electricity bills and other things which become problematic. So in Australian dispensation, we've been told that at least 90% must be paid. So there's kind of global precedent for this. But obviously the idea is to pay the amount that's finally offered, and then the dispute might ensue in the courts as to whether that is just and equitable, that particular amount. So we're allowing a variance, but again, you would have to explain why you had good runs, and of course, the moment you've cleared up any concerns about unpaid whatever liabilities, the full amount should be paid. So I think there's a misunderstanding in that matter. Finally, you see, and this becomes more philosophical, okay. A lot of what you said is, you know, there's a sanctity of private property versus nasty states, that the action of men, as you put it. Sometimes it's women, by the way, but men. Okay. Now, states can be nasty, and there need to be checks and balances on the state, regardless of whether it's a communist state or whether, and maybe that was one of the problems with ex-communist states, as you raised the matter. There does need to be constitutionality, there does need to be the rule of law, and there needs to be checks and balances on the state. So that's not an issue between us. However, I don't go with this notion of the sanctity of private property, because property, as one of the constitutional court judgments said, is a social construct. Okay. What counts as property, what doesn't count as property, how the property, all of those are social constructs, man-made, if you like to use your phrase. And therefore, the notion that private property sits on some sanctified perch, okay, is wrong. It does need to be protected, and it is protected in the Constitution. It can't be deprived of charity. Absolutely. And we really fully agree with that. That there must be, and there needs to be, a rule of general application, which is what we're trying to produce here, okay, which prevents any expropriation in the cases of expropriation. There are other ways of states dividing, according to the Constitution, called property as well. So, but maybe you believe property is, a sanctified thing and not man-made or social construct, but Minister Mercy and I, because our particular heritage, seem to believe that it's a social construct, and the Constitutional Court seems to agree with us in that respect. The Constitutional Court's not necessarily of the same political beliefs as we are. But thanks to the colleagues for raising it, and that's what this is about democracy, is raising our issues, engaging with and listening to each other, and not just shooting each other down. So thank you.
50 minutes there. Thank you. Solidarity presenter, succinct reply, I want to conclude.
Honourable Chairman, many questions, but your request is for succinctness and I shall comply. So, to single out some of the, excuse me if I miss some people now, maybe I shall start with the question by the Honourable Member to the right just behind Deputy Minister Cronin. On the question of whether by referring the jurist, by expressing in the bill that the role of the courts in this matter is to adjudicate on the amount of compensation, you are suggesting that that does not rule out other jurisdiction for the court. That, and you seem to be quite open to the idea that the court may rule on validity of an appropriation. You seem to think that that could be a just. If it is unjust, the court might want to rule on its justice. I think it is very simply, one may then either remove the identified, the one specified jurisdiction for the court, their compensation, or one could, without any trouble, either to your intentions with the bill or mine or anyone else's, add that the court may also speak on the justice of specific expropriation. It doesn't seem that we then differ on anything. And to allay any fears, we could either remove one or add another one. Then, I think I want to make the Honourable Mateve, even though she expressed a disappointment in my presentation, her remark on the rule of law versus rule of men gives an opportunity to stress that once more. It is important, and I think the Portfolio Committee would agree, that the idea with the legislation is to draft it so that not the whims of those who implement it determines the outcome, but the intentions of the drafters. And when one has that, and it is a rule, it's a law of general application and so forth, then one has a rule of law. When one, and this is what I am warning against, is that this Portfolio Committee might fail in drafting the bill in this way. And so what will happen is that discretion, arbitrary discretion, will be given to those who implement the legislation. And then we will have a rule of men. And that is as dangerous for the large property owner as it is for the small property owner. In fact, it might be worse for the small property owner. If we take a brief look at history, either our own or elsewhere in the world, rich people find ways to escape bad governments. Some get caught, but most of them find a way. And I'm quite sure you've heard the stories, I've heard the stories, and I believe them, that many of the very rich people in South Africa, not people who are for salaries like me, and maybe most of you, but the very rich people, they have already moved and hedged against much of the expropriating, shall we say, momentum that is currently in South Africa. What will remain to be expropriated, the harm that will remain will be for the small guy. And under a rule of law, the small guy is protected from the township to Waterkloof. And the Constitution has a reference to this, especially there was another question on the transformational impetus of the Constitution. The session eludes me now, but there is specific reference to a restoration of property to people who weren't able to get under apartheid, who were not able to get it before 1994. But what we are facing now, and this is the fear for the bill, that if you share this fear, amend it. There are many valuable suggestions on the table. I'm suggesting that Deputy Mr. Colonel or anybody else here did not seriously consider the IRR's proposal, least for race relations, but it does not seem to fall on fertile ground, and that is what concerns me so. Because if, as we said, a state should be able to expropriate, there are many good reasons for the state to expropriate, and I can see no good that will not be able to come from the IRR's version, that will not also come from, or shall it be differently? All the good things that the committee wants to achieve seems to me to be able to secure under the IRR's version. But a much, much broader range of functions can be performed under the current mode. So if the committee is indeed committed to a rule of law, to specifically delineating, protecting from the small guy, if you don't care about the rich guy, I think the rich guy is important for everybody else as well, but even if you don't care about him, for the sake of the small guy, then make the bill more closely defined, and consider seriously what I've said today, but I think specifically the alternative proposals on the table. Chairman, if I may conclude, just to make it
your last point.
My last point is that just to make sure that make it clear that I'm not opposed to everything. I would like to agree with Mr. Quinlan or something, and his explanation for the not the 100%, but for some mainly 80%. Because there might be an unsettled puzzle sign, is a good one. It seems a bit low. You can raise the 8%, but there is a method in not the management. Thanks, sir.
I would like to thank Solidarity for the presentation made, and honorable members will advise through the office of the secretary as to how we proceed. Next week we are going to have an input by the department on a completely different matter. But I think the week thereafter we will start dealing with all the inputs that we have made so that we move towards the clause-by-clause process in dealing with the bill. Honorable Bayer?
Mr. Dumas, in terms of the process and the taking us forward, during the course of the last 2 weeks and when we heard all these presentations, there were often proposals that I could see the Deputy Minister and his legal advisor or others from the department sitting and nodding their heads in agreement, and also in his comments he was very open to some of the proposals and indicated that he would take that on board. Now before we go ahead and start deliberating clause by clause, I wonder if we could not ask the department to come with an amendment law where they indicate to us which versions or which suggestions that have been made they are incorporating into the bill. But that would save us a lot of trouble in the deliberations when some of the proposals that have come forward already included, and then we don't need to discuss that any further. That's just a proposal from my side that might help us to speed up and big progress in the committee.
Honorable Masangwa, I also saw your hand.
Yeah, okay, I think Honorable Rerian has also accompanied. That was also a question.
You say that Honorable Dreya is covering you. Okay. I would also like to thank the various stakeholders who have walked this journey with us, and also members of the public who have come in and listen to the deliberations of the committee, also to the staff and everybody from the department who have made our work possible thus far. We will continue. I would like to thank one and all. Thank you very much, good folks. Thank you.